From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Alameda, California.
In the Excelsior neighborhood.
Cambridge, Massachusetts, but I grew up in Sonoma County.
Coming up, a new type of talk show from an unlikely place.
You know, all sorts of mysterious things happen when you're walking the streets of the Tenderloin. You never know who you're going to run into.
Then we'll hear about a small newspaper's police log that crosses over into literature.
Someone heard scratching at the front door. Deputies found wet paw prints, like those of a raccoon.
Then we dive into the tangled story of how San Francisco's Haight Street got its name.
He is the brother of one of Fletcher Haight, half-brother to the not-governor Henry Haight, and uncle to the governor Henry Haight.
You're going to love this story about Haight today on Cross Currents. In the heart of San Francisco's Tenderloin District, amid the crowded corners and occupied stoops, there's an anomaly that'll catch your eye. It's a man in a suit and a fedora clutching a microphone that reads TLTV. A few feet away is his cameraman. This is the duo behind the Mr. Jeffrey Show. KLW's Christina Loring brings us this story.
You won't catch the Mr. Jeffrey Show on any television channel. You'll have to find it on YouTube. But the real magic is what happens live. The host of the show, Jeffrey Greer, walks around the Tenderloin, asking residents about their experience in the neighborhood. His show isn't the typical drive-by reporting you usually hear about this part of town. It's because Mr. Jeffrey is no tourist voyeur.
Not only was I living in the Tenderloin for a long period of time, I was on the street. I was homeless 3 years. You know, I lived here. I slept in the hospitality house. I stood on each one of these corners.
Now that he's on the other side of the addictions that sent him to the curb, he's reporting from what he calls ground zero. There, he doles out questions to get some real talk from people on the street.
There's somebody who can beat my story every single time. There's no competition, trust me. You know, but it's great to talk and interact, and even the most degrungent person can look at you and tell that you're genuine. If you are genuine, people can tell. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, Mr. Jeffrey here, broadcasting live from Ground Zero in the TL here, the Mr. Jeffrey Show on TLTV. The topic today is the gold rush in the Tenderloin. Every time we turn around, there's a new building, there's a new office, there's new people walking around, but the residents don't always seem to be involved and included in the changes that are taking place. I just happened to see some old faces that I'm familiar with, and I just wanted to get their take on what their thoughts are in the Tenderloin today. This gentleman I worked with for quite a while down in a building, the first CBD office down at 134 Golden Gate. He had his own office. Obviously things haven't gone his way, but Wilton, what's happened, man? You weren't on the street before. What's going on?
Well, the social services in the city are just abysmal. But the flip side of the story is I've adapted to being homeless. I don't really care anymore about living in these conditions. And my life is online right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Wilton Woods. Now, I'm going to tell you, Wilton, what do we say? 4 years ago, Wilton had all of his teeth. He had about 25 more pounds. His hair was looking good. He, as you can tell, was very tech savvy. Wilton was doing really, really well. Well, he was looking good. He looked healthy. And for those people that don't know the radio view, Wilton's teeth were completely rotten out. He's got the familiar meth sores. You know, he's shrunken up to about the size of a noodle. And, you know, he's rambling. But he's still out here. So those are things that happen quite often, is you run into people that you've seen and you know, and they seem to enjoy running into somebody that they see or know, but has gone the other way. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, broadcasting live from Ground Zero once again. This is Mr. Jeffrey Show, the TLTV network. We're here on Turk and Hyde, home of the famous Black Hawk Jazz Club. We got a young man here, and what's your name, sir?
My name's Robert.
Robert, now since there's a lot of changes that are happening here, yeah, yeah. You got the buildings coming up, buildings yeah. going down. Yeah. Do you feel like you're included in this whole change?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
How are you included?
We have to find a way to fit in here. You know what I mean?
Okay.
If we down here, we have to find a way to fit in. We don't destroy where we stay, our own communities.
Uh-huh.
You know, what we do is we build on them, we thrive on them. You know what I mean?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is our take for the man on the street, Brother Robert. He said that there is a gold rush here and we need to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Don't separate yourself, be a part of it.
Yeah. Apply yourself to it.
That was cool. We got a little passion there, didn't we?
There's not a lot of media coverage that comes out of the Tenderloin or on the Tenderloin, really.
No, they'll drive by and do a shoot a story right quick, you know. Hubcap blew off the street, blah, 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 hit three people, you know. Guy shot and killed 3 o'clock in the morning in the Tenderloin, you know, that kind of story. But they don't sit down and do a one-on-one interview with people like we were talking to the guy back there. I mean, he's been here 20 years. 20 years. He's not a transient. He is a part of the makeup of the Tenderloin. Well, let me ask you a few questions.
Yeah.
It's basically an online show. All we do is put it up on online. It's Mr. Jeffrey's show. I just, you know, talk to folks and ask them what they think.
I thought you worked for the NAACP.
No, man. If it was
like the swag of it. Hey.
Man, I'm trying to sport.
Nah, it's all good. You looking nice.
So what's your name, son?
My name is Rio.
Okay. Rio, you from San Francisco?
Yeah, you can say that. 14 years.
Okay.
Born in Oakland, Bay Area native, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what you doing, man? You hanging around down here? You look a little young to be holding down a corner like this.
I'm 29. I mean, I'm taking it as a compliment.
Let me ask you something. You've been coming down here about 10 years?
Yeah.
What do you think about the changes that are taking place in the Tenderloin? Good, bad, or what do you think?
I think they should keep some of the establishments they got out here. Maybe make sure that this place is a place that people feel like they can come for a vacation. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't think that the people that are out here on permanent vacation should be out here permanently.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you ain't doing nothing with your life, man, why is you in the Tenderloin?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, at that, I guess we'll close our interview session. You know, all sorts of mysterious things happen when you're walking the streets of the Tenderloin. You never know who you're going to run into.
That story was produced by KALW's Christina Loring. Find more about the Mr. Jeffrey Show or Jeffrey Greer's San Francisco Recovery Theater at KALW.org. Click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. A microphone can be a good tool of expression. So can a police log, apparently, as we'll hear in this next story, brought to you by the Litography Project.
Ah, the Litography Project!
Shh!
Your guide to the literary Bay Area.
The Point Reyes Light, a small weekly newspaper in West Marin, is known for a lot of things. It won a Pulitzer Prize, it's done muckraking reporting on a local cult, and riled up residents with its change of ownership. But these days, it's loved for a police log that transforms people's worries into something close to literature. KLW's Hannah Kingsley Ma trekked up the coast to find out more.
A wrinkled white man was waving around a feather and shouting at children in Wharf Road.
This is not the opening line of a mystery novel.
Three men in suits were knocking on doors asking if people spoke French.
This isn't fiction.
Smashed persimmons were discovered.
They're a weekly summary of the calls residents of West Marin make to the police. They're published in the local newspaper, The Point Reyes Light.
A woman said she'd found a camera containing pictures of an older Asian couple on Thanksgiving.
That's Tess Elliott reading the calls. As editor-in-chief, she's the one who writes them up every week.
My approach is really to just pare down to the essential details.
As in?
An oak tree was reportedly dying, its debris crumbling into the roadway.
We met Elliott at her home in Inverness. There's a big open garden and a cat named Lewis. And Elliot seems like she'd happily read the sheriff's calls aloud for hours.
A bald man driving a Cadillac was acting unruly after using a bathroom at the Pelican Inn.
A pelican was in the bat.
And that's Elliot's 3-year-old son.
The pelican was in the bathtub.
Even he perks up and listens intently when the calls are being read. The calls are one of the most popular features of the newspaper. Maybe that's because they read like literature.
There's often very wonderful language that the deputies use.
Elliot herself is a graduate of the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics, and she exercises creative license too.
There are times when I might not include some follow-up information, a resolution to the call, because the report itself may just leave a striking picture in your mind.
She says she doesn't want to dilute them, because part of what sticks with readers is the unanswered questions they leave behind.
What actually does go on? It's kind of that Rashomon question.
Take, for instance, a call about a man entering a local deli with a machete.
Did he just come in with a machete and leave? Or did he, like, try to steal something? Or, like, was it just on him? You kind of get to put the story into your own terms.
That's local Melinda Borello.
I work at Hog Island Oyster Company, and I've lived in Point Reyes for 23 years.
She picks up the paper every morning just to read the sheriff's calls.
My best friend and I would make goals every summer, and one of our goals one summer was to get into the sheriff's call, so to have it actually pertain to one of us. And she ended up failing. She didn't do that, but I did.
Borello called the police when her neighbor locked herself in the upstairs bedroom.
I just sounded like, you know, another crazy person out in Point Reyes, but it was nice too, because I definitely beat my friend.
In plenty of places, police logs are representative of the worst day in someone's life. And the last thing people want is to end up in one. Those kind of entries do appear in the Point Reyes Light, but rarely. West Marin is a tangled landscape of coast and pastures, of oyster farms and lagoons. There are tule elk and pelicans and gray whales. There are black cows, lots of them.
There's, of course, the classic cow in the road call.
Nicasio, a black cow was loose.
Nicasio, one black cow was in the road.
Nicasio, about 20 cows were on the wrong side of a fence.
These are definitely rural reports.
From multi-generational dairy farmers, retirees, artists, and bike-wielding weekenders.
There's not a whole lot of actual crime.
Still, Elliot says, the calls are a poignant reflection of people's anxieties. The lost hiker, getting jumpy describing his waning cell phone battery. The passionate animal lover, emphasizing the word panting to describe a dog locked inside a car. Read the log carefully enough, and some of our most basic human fears begin to surface. The dark, a weird thump, the door left ajar, a beam of unexplained light in the distance.
We're kind of isolated, and you can feel unsafe.
A woman saw a light in a cabin on a Kehoe property and noticed a man shining a flashlight in front of her kitchen window.
At 1:43 a.m., lanterns were being launched over the village.
Someone heard scratching at the front door. Deputies found wet paw prints, like those of a raccoon.
The descriptive language, the conscious omissions, they make the entries feel eerie or absurd. The landscapes are strange, but the sentiments are strangely familiar.
Someone said a man with shoulder-length hair had sat all night in his champagne-colored Dodge Stratus parked on Morelos. He was now smoking a cigarette.
Someone reported a lost black box containing hearing aids.
A woman hunting mushrooms near the reservoir found a rope beside a crumpled Tyvek suit.
In Point Reyes, I'm Hannah Kingsley Ma for Cross Currents.
We want to hear what a poetic log about your community would sound like. Give us a call and leave us a message at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. And now it's time for The Source, where we find out how Bay Area places got their names.
I live in Cool Valley.
Oh, I see.
Pacific Heights.
Extremely.
San Carlos.
Well, there you are.
Daly City.
Sunnyvale.
It was done, finished. But
El Cerrito.
Something was lacking.
Lower Haight, man.
And then it came.
Think for a minute about San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury district. Will it ever move beyond its fame as the epicenter of the Summer of Love way back in 1967? Well, judging from its stores catering to tourists who want to remember that moment, it looks like it's going to be a long time yet. But what's behind the iconic name Haight-Ashbury? Why is it named for that particular intersection? The Ashbury part is pretty clear. It's the street right smack dab in the middle of that legendary district. But why Haight? And who was this Haight anyway? KLW's Stephen Short met someone in the Haight with some possible answers.
Meet Angus McFarlane.
My name is Angus McFarlane. I literally grew up two houses up from the intersection of Haight and Ashbury.
Which is, of course, the city's most famous intersection. Nearly 20 streets intersect Haight Street.
We pretty much know who each one of those streets is named after.
Ashbury Street, for example, is named for Monroe Ashbury. He was a member of the 1870 Park Commission that was responsible for planning Golden Gate Park. So were Messrs. Cole, Stanion, and some other street names near the park. Edward Baker was a noted lawyer and a friend of Abraham Lincoln, says McFarlane.
But Haight is a mystery.
Because, well, there was a lot of Haight in early San Francisco, or more accurately, I should say, Haights. There were two Henry Haights. One became California governor. The other, his uncle, was a banker and a county supervisor.
Another was Fletcher Haight, who was the father of Governor Haight.
See what I mean? McFarlane says Fletcher Haight can't be the namesake, though.
Because he didn't come to San Francisco until 1854, and Haight Street appeared on maps as early as 1851, so Fletcher is not a contender.
And Haight Street appeared on maps earlier than that. While McFarlane eliminated this candidate, he uncovered another Haight whose name he wanted to toss into this contest.
And I think the honor of having Haight Street named after him was a gentleman by the name of Samuel Haight.
Look up Samuel Haight today and you'll find lots of references to an interactive gaming character who is, or was, a werewolf. Ours wasn't a creation of a computer programmer, and wasn't a werewolf for that matter. But he did arrive with some battle-ready companions.
With about 700 soldiers who had enlisted in the army, shipped out from New York, went around the Horn, arrived in San Francisco, March 1847, to fight in the Mexican-American War.
Young Samuel settled here after the war and must have had some nice things to say about the place because his relatives soon followed. And they soon made their mark on the area.
He is the brother of Fletcher Haight, a half-brother to the not-governor Henry Haight, and uncle to the governor Henry Haight.
Man, they should do this on Genealogy Roadshow. That's going to take a long time to untangle all those lines.
Records at the Society of California Pioneers identify Samuel Haight as part of the regiment command staff during his war service. Later, while living in San Francisco, he was a delegate to the California Constitutional Convention. Reason enough to earn a street name, I'd say. But McFarlane is a devoted local historian. He's contributed to the Journal of the San Francisco Museum and Historical Society, for example, and he's continually peering into the past. And guess what he found? Another Haight. But this one wasn't a father, brother, half-brother, uncle, or son to anyone.
Her name was Wealtha Haight, who was involved with the orphanage from 1853 until 1904.
The orphanage is the Protestant orphanage asylum. Wealtha's husband, the not Governor Henry Haight, donated the land for this facility. And Mrs. Haight was on the building committee for the grand Gothic structure, which had pleasingly scary spindles and a spooky turret poking from the roof.
You can almost imagine Dr. Frankenstein conducting experiments with his big tower waiting for the lightning bolt to strike.
If we assumed that Samuel Haight's accomplishments were reason enough to name the street for him, Wealtha Haight's commitment to its orphans should have gained her some support.
She put in 51 years involved with the welfare of children. She was on the board of managers. She died in 1906, just before the earthquake, at the age of 81.
McFarlane had hoped all along that the street was named in her honor, and a pamphlet he found at the Bancroft Library in Berkeley seems to confirm that. It was written in 1900 and titled Some Reminiscences of the San Francisco Orphan Asylum. The author is Mrs. W.A. Wealtha Haight. It says,
"It was difficult to reach the newly acquired property, as the only road was a narrow track, partly overgrown with chaparral."
What is now called the Lower Haight was so remote in the 1850s that the city hadn't even surveyed it yet. But Mrs. Haight knew people.
"My husband, being a member of the Board of Supervisors, soon had this accomplished, and out of compliment to two of the managers, Waller Street and Haight Street were named."
It went without saying that Mrs. Elizabeth Waller and Mrs. Wealtha Haight were the unnamed managers. This wasn't an example of a humble brag. It was simply the polite way for one to refer to oneself when listing one's accomplishments. This first-person account would seem to pretty well settle this question, but another neighborhood historian may find other documents that bring it into dispute once again. Personally, I'd hate to see that happen. In the Haight-Ashbury District of San Francisco, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
We'd like to know what part of the Bay Area you'd like Stephen Short to dig into next. Email us at news@kalw.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Audrey Dilling, Chris Hambrick, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Ted Muldoon, Colin Peden, Liz Mack, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. The line producer was Leela Day. Our managing editor is Jen Sheehan. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Ah, the cliche.
And the world is your oyster.
They really put the cart before the horse.
This was a smoking gun.
It seems like it's everywhere. On the news.
Is this game of political football going to hurt the Democrats in the end?
From politicians.
There is no silver bullet that can bring down gas prices right away.
But not here on Cross Currents from KALW News. Tune in to our local news magazine weekdays at 5 for the anti-cliche. We'll throw stuff at you you've never heard before. Like this.
I had a patient who was absolutely cured by blueberry juice.
Or this.
For now, what we want is the gooey, goopy form of life.
And we'll spare you drivel like this.
A tool in our toolbox.
Path of least resistance.
The bottom line.
Ugh, give me some more of that good stuff.
I believe that people who listen to radio are quality people.
That's what I'm talking about. Check us out weekdays at 5. We're Cross Currents on KALW 91.7.